Oh my God, Jenny. Did you hear that if we elect Obama, every American gets a free taco?
Oh please, you are so gullible. Everyone knows that state-funded tacos cost 10 times as much as private sector tacos.
You are so dense, Jenny. I said they were free.
I guess someone wasn't paying attention to Reality Exploit Roundtable.
When all you have is a search engine, everything looks like a database.
Let's move on.
Privacy is nothing to be granted. Privacy is something you take yourself.
They've got the Mossad, the CIA, and Hillary Clinton behind them.
We're now beyond what the Stasi could even dream of.
Reality Exploit Roundtable.
Hello and welcome to Reality Exploit Roundtable Episode 5. In this very special episode, we'll be talking about taxes, Trapwire, brown-nosing overachievers, and German overreach. My name is Voodoo, and I'll be your host and moderator for this episode. But enough about me, let's meet our panelists. From AgorasRadio.com, the one, the only, Hero White.
Hey, guys.
From Anarplex.net and the new super-secret project going on at Shadowlife.cc, Smuggler.
Shabbat shalom.
You know him as the real Plato on Twitter and Reddit, but we just call him Plato.
Hey, guys.
And our special guest panelist today, the publisher of FreedomsPhoenix.com and the host of Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, Ernest Hancock.
Hello.
All right, now simmer down. Let's go straight on to our first topic. For topic number one, a Gawker Ranner proposes a maximum income scheme. The new socialist French president, François Hollande, has made good on a campaign promise to set the marginal income tax rate at 75%. Actor Will Smith, in France promoting Men in Black 3, was asked about taxes in a local interview. Smith said, quote, "I'm a black man who didn't go to college, yet I get to travel around the world and sell my movies, and I believe very firmly that America is the only place on earth that I could exist, so I will pay anything that I need to pay to keep my country growing." Apparently anything is a number somewhat less than 75%.
Moi, s'il faut payer les impôts, ça me pose aucun problème.
Vous savez qu'en France, cette question était au cœur également de la campagne. Vous savez combien on aurait, vous, vous auriez eu à payer d'impôts, vous, au-delà de 1 million d'euros? Pas 30%, 75%.
Not 30. 75.
75.
Ah ouais. Wow, yeah, that's different.
Bon, là,
that's
c'est vrai que c'est pas pareil quand même.
Yeah, 75.
75%.
Well, you know, wow. God bless America. God bless.
Que Dieu bénisse les États-Unis.
Smith's reaction is understandable. Even the most ardent class warriors would admit that a tax rate of 3/4 of anyone's earnings is confiscatory, even while advocating the tax. But Hamilton Nolan doesn't think 75% is good enough. In an opinion piece for Gawker, Nolan advocated a maximum personal income of $5 million. All earnings above that would be taxed at 99%. Quote, "A hefty 75% tax, though completely just, will not only spook them enough to flee, but allow them to retain a modicum of dignity while doing so." But $5 million? I defy the slickest PR firm in America to explain to a nation of struggling, underemployed working class people with a median household income of just over $50,000 why an already wealthy person felt the need to leave the country, taking money out of the taxpayers' pockets in a very literal sense, rather than donate to the top common good earnings over 100 times the nation's median household income.
All right, Hero, I see you jumping up and down there, dude. Just walk us through what the short and long-term effects would be of a 99% top rate on earnings over $5 million.
Well, I think this shows a typical centralized planner's view of the world of being static. When they do that, they make these particular tax laws, and they think that everyone's going to continue doing what they're doing rather than possibly reacting to that. In that view, they think, okay, someone's going to make 5,000. I read in the article, or 5 million. They read in the article that these people would be lauded, praised upon, and they would be held up as these great people who have contributed to society. But the what's going to happen is that people who are making $5 million, at the moment that they make $5 million and $1, they're going to stop working because labor and work is like it's an exchange of goods. So if I go to the grocery store and I load up on groceries, I come down with a car full of groceries, and there's a guy at my front door, and he says, "You can only bring in you're only allowed to bring in a trunk of groceries," and he takes the rest in my car. Then every time I go to the grocery store, I'm not going to bring home more than the actual amount that's in my trunk. And if I, same thing, if I have a gold mine and I'm out there and I, and every time, every day I come back and they say, oh, sorry, you're only allowed one kilogram of gold of extraction per year out of that mine, then I'm not going to continue working in there pulling out a kilogram every month. I'm going to stop. Now, so what that turns into is this turns into a law that basically limits labor. Now, does that mean that people are going to stop working? No. What it means is that people are going to stop reporting. This is basically a law that's going to say $5 million is the maximum amount of money that the government is allowed to know that you do. I mean, that's essentially how it works out. So if it's people are going to either $5 million, they're going to say, hey, I can't get around not making $5 million. So they're either going to leave the country, they're going to hide it, they're going to split it up, they're going to do all kinds of shenanigans, but no one's going to be making $5 million. And the person that says, oh, I paid $1 million in taxes, it's going to be nothing but a public relations thing, not something where there's some humanist that's given back to humanity. So I think that it's in one way, the effects of it could be positive in the same way that if the government said you have a maximum amount of you can only have $100 in your bank account or $10,000 in your bank account. I mean, what does that do? That puts limitations on capital flow. And what happens when you have limitations? People find other ways to do that. So as an agorist and someone who's interested in counter economics, I think that this possibly would have positive effects in growing alternate systems of financial storage, wealth transfer, money transfer systems, and move a lot of money into outside of the coffers of the government. And one last thing on this, just from a statist viewpoint, this, you know, these super high tax rates as you go up, they're very self-defeating, because the current system as it is in the United States, for example, is ideal because it gives you the maximum amount of liberty combined with the maximum amount of government wealth extraction, as opposed to like the Soviet Union or some other regimes where if they have 100% tax, the economy's not grown enough for them to be the parasite, suck the money out. So in some ways, this is a very bad move for them. And so I think that the less money that the government is going to be able to extract from its people, in that way is a positive thing.
Now, Ernie, a $5 million cap would put probably at least a little bit of a crimp on your lifestyle, wouldn't it?
I mean, yeah.
Can you live within $5 million a year?
You know, that's not what they're really at. You know, that's just they set whatever arbitrary number that is intentionally high to where there are, you know, the 1% of the 1% or something. I mean, that's not what they're advocating. They're advocating for a change in culture, a change in viewpoint, a change in the way people see wealth. I remember it was the early 90s, I think. It was Paul Hogan, the guy that played Crocodile Dundee. And it was after the first or second one or something, and he's moving to Hollywood. And they interviewed him, and I remember he said, he goes, you know what I like about America is that when you go to America and you get your first Rolls Royce, everybody's like clapping, going, yay, right on, you got a Rolls Royce. You know, good for you. Good on you, man. You know, he goes, it's a cultural thing to where in other countries, more socialist, oh, see, he's just, he must have, you know, exploited somebody or stole from somebody or something. Well, that is what this is all about. It's to change the perception that we have of successful people. Well, now it's a successful people usually are getting there at push or pull of some political de la rip somebody off or had some monopoly granted or, you know, whatever the heck they did from government. But the thing is that the attitude of being successful, American ingenuity, the rewards for success, that is what they're trying to change. That's why they pick such a high number like that, because they're attempting to get cultural support for taking other people's stuff. Because once you get that, well, there is such a thing as being too successful. Once you get that, well, then all you got to do is just alter what successful is. It'll go from 5 million to 4 to 3 to 2 to 1 to where you got a job. I mean, you know, so I understand what they're doing. And the problem has always been that. Everybody's so worried about the numbers or percentage or who will do it. It's always just a matter of degree. Once you give up the principle, you already lost. And that's what they're working on, is to give up the principle of you get to have and own and control what is yours.
I can see it being a PR move towards telling the masses, hey guys, you're the poor, these are the rich, they're paying for you and your health care and all your houses and bridges and fire departments, so you better listen to them.
Ernest, what you brought up with that strategy is correct, and if you look back at the history of the when they created the income tax inside the United States, it did not touch anybody that was not already the ultra rich, and then they slid it down.
Yeah, no, once you give it up, it's, heck, I remember, you know, I did any research on it. It was only supposed to apply to government guys anyway, you know, government paychecks or something. I don't even know how the heck that circle jerk was supposed to work, but it's just, it's the principle of it, because they'll always change the number. They always give you a big number or a small number. It's a whole bunch of taxes over a bunch of little things, you know, in a little bit. Yeah, but once you give up the principle, all they do is come back later and change the number with whatever justification that they got. It's, you know, and the first speaker, he really hit it on the head to where, you know, I'm like, can we hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave? Because you know that's where you're going anyway. The thing is, I don't advocate for that. It's just that until everybody's ox is gored, until they realize just right. how much they're damaged, they're not going to fix it. And I see the alternative currency coming in. That's why we've been big pushers of, you know, silver dime cards and all that kind of stuff, just to push the app that's on iPhone and Android, Silver Calculator, so that they can understand that you're not only need to learn about alternative currencies and how to do it, you're not going to have a freaking choice here pretty soon.
Another thing that should be added to that is the secondary effects of that, such a tax. It really means that total disposable wealth per person drops dramatically. And that has an effect on how people invest in things. So if I can only earn $5 million a year, I will not be able to fund something like the next Google or the next space exploration or whatever on my own. It won't be the brave investor that goes to a length to make something possible. But instead, the main money, the big chunks of money will be in the banks and in the government. So the whole process of selecting investments and raising new companies and so on will be centralized and then decided on by a committee, and they know how well that works.
Well, very good. Hopefully, when you go to a high tax rate, like the top tax rate in the 70s was 91%. Of course, you had price controls and stagflation to go along with it, but just think how much worse it would have been without that sweet, sweet taxes rolling in. All right, let's move on to topic number two. Trapwire is everywhere. In 2004, a little company just busting at the seams with CIA spooks created Trapwire, which has since blossomed into every petty tyrant's wet dream. Trapwire collects data from all those CCTV and pan-tilt zoom cameras that have been popping up like fungus all over the United States. Information about Trapwire has been publicly available for some time, but last week, WikiLeaks released the latest batch of Strapfor emails that describe just how pervasive Trapwire is. The emails describe a system that combines millions of faces, license plate scans, and suspicious activity reports in the nation's most populous areas, and then mines that data to predict terrorist intentions. Here's RT's web producer Andrew Blake talking about the system.
But so what they do is they monitor all these video streams. They get sent to a database, an analysis center, and they can go and they can zoom in on someone. They can find out who they are and what they're doing. And they can go back and they say, walk the cat back and go backwards, go in time. And they can start off with one suspicious activity report and go to see what this person's been doing. And they can find out who these people are, where they're going to go. You know,
these are not criminals or suspected terrorists.
Well, I mean, that's why it was established. They said that this is here. You know, Abraxas started Trapwire back in 2004 as a response to kind of like 9/11. But it's everywhere. And when I say everywhere, we're just starting to find out really how deep this goes.
Ernie, you've spent decades building yourself a huge platform and giving yourself a real big megaphone. You make a point of calling your shots. I'm going to be here, and this is what I'm going to be doing. But John Q. Public doesn't do that. But the problem with John Q. Public is he's got a demonstrated lack of care about privacy. He doesn't care about your privacy. He doesn't care about my privacy. He doesn't care about his own privacy. So why did this blow up to be such a big story?
You know, I don't really believe that the people are as supportive of this stuff as much as they're just overwhelmed. I'll give you an example. Here in Arizona, it was, keep in mind, Janet Napolitano, head of the Gestapo, was our governor here. And there was a couple of main things that she wanted to do. One was she wanted to have school-funded preschool because they wanted to, heck, even by kindergarten, the kids are starting to learn more from grandma about, good and bad and right and wrong. And they needed to get them earlier and earlier and earlier so they can indoctrinate them. But the one thing that she really pushed was the cameras on the highways. And, of course, everybody wants to make money and this and that and so on. Well, a lot of people didn't know, and we got them pulled down here, at least, that they had, say they did. What they had on the highway is they were tracking everybody by video. They thought it was just a license plate snapshot, speeding, you get a ticket. And we're going, man, you guys don't get it. This is continuous video that they're putting and storing, and they do what you were talking about, this retroactive data request, person of interest kind of thing, and they'll go and walk it back. They'll go, okay, this person we want to track from in every vehicle that came, anything associated with him and wife and kids and whatever. Here's his cell phone. Here's this. Here's tracking GPS. And they walk it all back and build up a profile of somebody. So once the people, that's the one thing that we were making a big deal out of. We want you to understand exactly what's really going on here. So whether they like it or don't like it or not, at least they should be informed of what's happening. And I'm of the opinion that the Generation Next coming up and so on, they really just don't care that much. I have four kids, two boys, two girls, 22 to 26. During the mid-2000s, from 2003 to 2008, around in there, they're all graduating from high school. I have all them, their sports, their captain of this and member of that and all this, and their 15 gazillion friends. I had estrogen and testosterone dripping all over my walls for a decade. And I tell you, they don't care. They're on MySpace giving their favorite colors and pictures of all their friends. And then here came Facebook. And I, if I'm NSA, CIA, whatever, FBI going, I'm like, hey, thanks for playing and give me all that data, man. You got some passwords for me too. So I made sure, just as you guys are very critical of how open, we're not geeky enough on Freedom's Phoenix. I'm going, holy crap, Facebook and MySpace and all. I mean, you understand this is going straight to the man, right? I just want to make sure you know this. They're like, yep, don't care. All right, cool. So they're in a mindset that they already know they're on. Heck, a lot of times, ooh, somebody's watching me. I feel so special, So I'm like, it's like the jerk with Steve Martin. He's going, look, I'm in the phone book. This is how you get to be successful. I mean, so this is the mindset that they have. Is that bad? Now, some people in your position, you'd be going, oh, that's terrible, man. You guys have no idea. Where they are like, I just choose not to care. And the best advice I got when I first started getting all active and conspiratorial in the early 90s, a friend of mine says, Ernie, if you'd stop being so paranoid, all those people would stop following you. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean they're not following me, but I understood what it meant. I don't care. I just freaking don't. I'd soon they not take all my goodies, which is why I put my resources in actual physical stuff that I got hidden around. But the point is that I'm going, look, I don't care. And this next generation doesn't care. I know a lot of people are all geeky and they know how to do and protect and five layers of encryption, de la, whatever. But the vast majority of people and the young don't care. As long as their surveillance doesn't mess up their phone signal or how they're accessed to the internet, they don't care. Is that bad? That's a debatable thing. But I'm telling you, from my firsthand experience, they just don't care.
Smuggler, in 2010, Abraxas sold Trapwire and some anonymizing software to Cubic. Now, Cubic just happens to be a company that has 80% market share on all these smart cards, the smart cards that you buy at the train station with your personal credit card and then use to get onto the train, which is serviced by Trapwire. So at this point, they've got your credit card, your license plate, your face, your travel habits, and they know which porn sites you felt you needed to be anonymous on. Is Ernie right? Do we just give up on some sort of quaint notion of privacy at this point?
Well, I think there are diverging opinions on that. It is true that the majority of younger generation people give a shit about it. And in my opinion, that is a stupid move and a sad move. However, there are other people in the same generation, minority by now, that becomes more and more extreme on how they protect their privacy. I mean, just keep in mind, there are several hundred thousand people on this planet regularly using Tor, which is a very popular anonymization system. So I am not so sure that the battle is over, and I'm not so sure that it's inconsequential for liberty if privacy is gone. I mean, you have to keep in mind that privacy over our data is something very, very similar that, as private property. I mean, it goes back to the same Latin word, which means removed from the public. Our private property in physical things is that stuff that I can decide over, that stuff where I can make decisions, that stuff where only people come into that I like. And the, a government that wants 99% of my income is nothing else but saying, you know what, your physical stuff belongs to me. And most people think that's not a very good idea. And the same thing is true when it comes to data. People must realize that their data is something that is of value for themselves as individuals. It's a place where, when you protect it, you can make decisions better without being influenced by coercion and bad-mouthing of others. It's the place that creates the character. And I have not given up on the new generation to find out that some privacy, some secrecy even, it's a pretty good idea. And I don't really want to give in to companies like Abraxas. I mean, keep that in mind. The word Abraxas comes from the Gnostic god Abraxas, who's the god of prophecy and wisdom and power and whatever. They are playing God in the most critical sense we can imagine right now in a secular society. They want to know everything, be everywhere, and influence everything.
Okay,
that's their job, and okay, I'm not giving up on that.
I don't want you to get... Let me go ahead and express myself on this so you understand. The fact that they don't care is not that they shouldn't, but I give you this. What they are looking for is goodies. They're looking for access. They're looking for the net benefit of being able to communicate and socially network and all that kind of stuff. And I guarantee you offer a free market solution to that, and you give them an opportunity to go from here over to there and give them the privacy, they're all over it. I remember during the 90s when they start, all of a sudden we got servers in Finland that are using encrypted emails and used to be able to blah, blah, blah. Now, oh, I'm sorry, you have to have a Social Security number to get an ISP account, to have a yada, yada, and everybody gets to know who you are. And then you got head of KGB doing, finding out Trojans and viruses that the U.S. government is doing everywhere and so on. 300 million people are voluntarily giving them all the information to be able to find and go and in and out. And what does he want? Advocating to the world. Oh, everybody's got to have their internet passport, day law, all this. And where's the competition? You know, that's why I tell you, this is how we look at it. There was Spaceship One first sent the private guy into space. We were there. Spaceship One, Government Zero. We made that sign in my living room. And we went out there, and Bert Rattan grabbed that from me and goes, hey, man, I got to send a message to the media. And he goes, and the guy standing on top of it, that went worldwide. Didn't go in America. It's a Popular Science and Variety later or something, or Vanity Fair or something. But I'm going, man, that was planetary. But what the reason we were so enthusiastic about supporting that on the show and going, and a bunch of my listeners were there for the party, 13,000 people screaming and yelling, is because I knew what it meant. It meant that we get to put up our own satellites, that we can bypass the communication. You want the you want to have, you know, this kind of privacy, you got to get off of their system. So what did Richard Branson do? All of a sudden he starts buying up bankrupt communication satellites, saying, oh yeah, we're going to give free internet to the third world poor. Yeah, BS. It's going to be internet off the system to, you know, everybody. I can see where this is going. Let them have internet 2, 3, 4, 5. I give you internet, you know, Moonbase Alpha. That's what I give you, is that somebody like you guys or someone else are going to provide an entirely different internet to where you can bypass all this, communicate. And in the early days, the question was whether each person's computer, their own thing, became a node. You know, and they kind of, well, we'll go this collective kind of, well, it didn't work out. But, you know, this is the transparency. I give you another example. Let me finish with this. is that here in Arizona, we made a big giant deal out of the voter database that was being, you know, sent all over the place on the internet and all this. You know, they wanted to know part of your social security number and your mother's maiden name and your phone number and your address and all this. And they were selling that data. Parties were selling it for up to 10 cents a name in electronic format. And we're going, wow, it was like a couple $100,000 to buy it from the government. You get a little discount if you buy it from the party. Well, I was county chairman. I go, I got it right here. I give it to everybody for free. You know, take it, do it. And I'm going, we're going to publish it on the internet. They freaked out, went suit, go back and forth, because all that we were making a point of is that, look, they're doing it anyway. All the bad guys know this. All the most evil political scumbag, special interest, whatever, got all this information that at taxpayer expense was collected. But the point that we made, a violation of the Equal Protection Clause and this 14th Amendment, everybody under the same rules thing, is the people that's not on that list are the judges and the police. Well, after the end of this trial and everything, they went and changed the law. You couldn't put it on the internet, which they do anyway, and transfer it. But what did they add to that? The prosecutor and the clerks and all this stuff. So when I'm for transparency. If you're going to have this transparency thing, fine. But you got to include the SS officers. You got to include the Gestapo. You got to include the Nuremberg on trial judges. That very thing that they are doing is trying to make everybody else's data, you know, open to the man, but the man doesn't get to be on the list. That is the issue. And when you really want to get down to this, the free market is what's going to provide the solution. And what have they done? They want to limit your ability to be able to get on the internet without having a passport or some crap. So I'm going, I understand the issue. The issue is not, you know, whether we get to know everything about everybody. It's that we never get to know anything about them.
Hear, hear.
I think I have to jump in there, because the main data collection right now is done by private companies. That's number one. Number two is there are private alternatives to most of those big vacuum cleaners for data. People don't really use it. There's a reason for that. Providing services costs money. And there are two ways you can make profit in a company today when it comes to, you know, data services. Number one is you collect as much data as you can and sell it. And that's your income stream. That is what Facebook does and Google does and whatever. The other option is you go and don't collect data on your customers and don't sell any data. But what happens? You have to pay it somehow. So you have to collect fees. And people are too cheap for that. They give a many of them give a shit about their privacy. And it's stupid, especially even if everything was really private. It doesn't really matter what data is there. It's can you handle the data and can you act on the data? And that's nothing that has to do with the data being open, but that is about how smart are you, how many people do you have, how many computers have you do you have, and are you interested to use
data? It always goes back to what I'm always saying. It's a cultural thing. You got to get people to want to be private, to care. You can't make them care. You know, if you provide a service or an opportunity to be, you know, secret and encrypted, one, I wouldn't trust it anyway. I know a lot of people that go, oh, yeah, let's encrypt it. Oh, let's go through this anonymizer. Oh, let's go. I'm going, yeah, you're dreaming. You're going to plan the revolution using ones and zeros. Guess what? You're already infiltrated. So, I mean, you can't go at it that way.
Yeah, the only problem is the more we tell people that there's nothing to trust, the more they won't be able to protect themselves in the planning phase. And look into history. When it comes to the big revolutions, when it comes to enlightenment, whatever, if there were secret meetings where people got together, exchanged their ideas, made secret plans, and hit. And the thing today is, I'm not really interested in revolution. I'm not a revolutionary. I don't like violence and all that shit. But the thing really is, if you think that there's no way out, you have already given up all the powers you have when it comes
no,
to
I think sentence. There is a way
that
out.
That is what I'm very thinking.
No, my way out is, you know, there are those that just want to be left alone. There are those that just won't leave me alone. It's no more complicated than that. Are you a leave me alone guy? Yeah, cool. Then we're buds. You're not? Oh, then you're part of the enemy. I shun thee. I break with thee. I go over here. I do something else. And I'm telling you, this is where I'm at. There is no secret meaning that's going to change the culture. In fact, it's just the opposite. It's all just a mood. It's just a shift. It's a, you know, it's wallet voting. In fact, we have walletvoting.com is what we, I had that since 03 waiting for the silver thing to hit, and boom, boom, we just blanketed the planet with this. We have them in Europe using silver francs, using silver pesos in South Central America, in Mexico. We got, you know, the dime cards, and it's just for people to open source and open out in their mind. This is how you get off. Our big project for 2013, we're already working on, I'm looking at a furnace right now. We're making our own nanotubes for nickel iron batteries so that we can get totally off the grid. You want to get, you want to suck the power away from them? It's power to the people, literally. Get the power, get off the grid. Quit all these excuses for wars and regulation and being on their grid and so on. I'm telling you, as much effort as I put in the 08 for the Lovolution, as much effort as I did in 2012 for people to understand alternative currencies, is now we're going to power. Power. You want to stop the man? Get off of their grid. It's an activist thing as an individual. Do you do it secret? Do we have secret meetings? Hell no. It's all, look, here, we're going to take the right side of my right foot and put it against the right side of your head, and there's nothing you can do about it. And the more they come after you, the more they just prove your point. So this is just, there is no, you can't make people do what you want. There is no market, you know, for people to put forth extra effort to be, care about things they don't care about until you get, you know, ID theft and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden you got a market. Create the market.
Yeah. Ernie, let's take this a little different direction. Plato, Anonymous called for retaliation against Trapwire by smashing these cameras. Is property destruction the right way to go?
For people who believe it is, I mean, that's what they're going to do. I don't think so. I would just avoid the cameras.
Hero, the former NSA tech director William Binney said the feds now have a file on every American. That's 300-some million files, assuming he's talking about something like Trapwire. All this data that they're collecting, doesn't it make it tough for them to actually mine through it and come out with a usable result?
Yeah, it's the amount of data is overwhelming, but they're not so much interested in finding everything on everyone as they are in finding everything on particular people that they're looking for. So they'll look at particular vectors, and then they'll do cross matches between all that. So if you're talking to someone who talked to someone else that is already some type of high-profile thing, then you'll get flagged, and then they'll look at your connections. Maybe not even individually, they'll look at your connections for flags, and then they'll dig into it as much as they want in 3D video, going back all the way in the past and all your transactions and everything. So it's not so much about people just popping up as it is them being able to. If you're a target, you're pretty screwed.
Okay, I want to ask you guys,
or if you become a target in the future.
I want to ask you guys this. This is something that came up on Freedom's Phoenix years ago, and I remember this, and I can't find it, and maybe you know about it. What happened was, is you wanted to have some kind of visual representation of this data collection, because human beings looking at spreadsheets of just a bunch of numbers doesn't mean anything. So they go, all right, here we have what it is, like a topographical map, a hologram. It comes up on your screen and kind of, ooh, we're looking, we put in all the variables. I had a friend of mine, he goes, yeah, I go to his house and he has Ferret magazine on his coffee table. Ferret? You don't even have a ferret. He goes, yeah, it's just to throw him off. Throw who off? What are you talking about? He's like, yeah, you subscribe to random magazines. You do get just kind of messes up their database. He's just, you know, entertaining himself. And then I came across this article from the NSA. They came up with the 3D representation, like a topo map, and all of a sudden you get a red peak somewhere, and that is an individual. Oh, it's Osama this or whatever, it's Ernie. They come up and they go, ooh, we're going to drill down on this bad boy. Yeah, well, he's just a Lovolution guy. He's an activist. He's this, he's that. He kind of paid, oh, this other guy came over to his house and used his router and his Wi-Fi and his computer, and he's kind of a activist. Okay, and the two of them together make a whatever. But they don't see any real open threat to the state, because they don't care about, in the Matrix, you can rape, pillage, and murder all you want as long as you don't challenge the state. So when you start challenging the Matrix itself, here comes the guys with the mirror, sunglasses, and little things in their ear. Ooh, you're not allowed to challenge the state. So they have to change the variables, because these are not really challenging the state. So what do? They change the variables to bring the base up to the peak that it was before. Then you have everybody complain. All the high school students, the college students are whining. Your people are getting in the streets. They go and start checking them. Well, yeah, they're not really a threat. Everybody's, then it builds up again and again and again. And now with the base, a big mesa out there in Monument Valley, you know, what now is the norm? Heck, they would have put you in Guantanamo 10 years ago. So I'm going, they don't know what they're looking at. They don't understand the separation between what it used to be and what it is now. Now, the level of dissatisfaction with the system. So it doesn't matter how much data they get. It doesn't matter the 3D model and the topographical and the whatever. It doesn't matter because they don't know how to interpret the data. They're looking at it. They're going, well, it's different from everybody else. But then everybody else is at that level. So I'm telling you, man, this entire planet, the Generation Next, I call it, this whole evolution, the Arab Spring, all what happened here in America. We got a Haria Phoenix, which is Arabic for Freedom's Phoenix, a Freedom Arabic Twitter and Arabic Facebook. We were heavily involved in the Arab Spring a year and a half ago. We sparked whatever we could with that, sending DVDs and translations of the Declaration of Independence, and had, you know, Arabic done from the Philosophy of Liberty and put them on DVDs and send them to Alexandria and Cairo. And now the second most downloaded Philosophy of Liberty is from freaking Saudi Arabia. I'm telling you, this, they don't know what they're looking at. It doesn't matter how much data they get. Heck, the more they get, the worse it is for them.
That's all good. That is great conversation there. I love that. Let's move on to topic number three. I hate to leave that. That was good. That was great. But topic number three, when I was a kid, we would spend time trying to disable the school buses, not make them better.
Johnny Cohen had an idea to put plexiglass shields on old school buses to make them more aerodynamic and fuel efficient. He called the idea Green Shields. When he submitted it to the Pepsi Refresh Project with his friends, it bagged a busload of votes and a $25,000 Pepsi Refresh grant. Johnny cares about turning yellow gas guzzlers into big green machines. What do you care about?
I know what I care about. Here's a 17-year-old, and I'm not going to call him a kid, 17-year-old man who came up with a great idea. He's going to save these bus companies some money by making the buses more aerodynamic. Plato, in the Scientific American article, he was convinced that that was going to translate into a better education for him. Are you convinced?
Right. Johnny's hoping that the government's going to save money on fuel-efficient buses and that they'll use that money to better fund education. They aren't saving money yet because it's not in production. It's not being put on buses. Johnny's sister, Azza, says that it's really hard to keep the momentum going. We keep pitching to the media, keep emailing our senators, and calling the EPA. What? Apparently, government approval from the EPA and Department of Transportation, those are the barriers that are preventing Johnny from actually putting these green shields on buses. Now, this is greenshields.com. It's just this little plastic dome that you put on top of the bus, and it saves 10 to 20% on fuel efficiency. And they're cheap, like 100 bucks to make. So this kid just had $1 million idea. He's been working on it from age 12 to 17, which is a third of his life or so. And he's been working with engineers. They got a fourth-gen design. It works fine. So all he has to do is throw up a Kickstarter and put on a bunch of buses. But if he does that, someone goes to jail. So, Johnny, my message to you is to take this as an example of how government screws up markets. And good luck with that education.
What's really interesting, Smuggler, I don't know if you know this about the United States or not, but we have these big yellow dump truck-looking buses that we put kids on to get them to school, where we indoctrinate them for 13 years at the hands of the state. But these buses are used by schools and prisons. Please tell me that Europeans have something better than a dump truck to wrangle the kids.
Actually, what we do with your school buses, we import them to Germany to turn them into rolling bars to have parties in the city. And that's not a joke. We have long distance buses mostly for school kids. You know, you have nice seats and you have air conditioning on all that. And then we have the poor areas, and in them it's like public transportation, and it's no problem having 100 kids in a single bus.
All right, so here's a question for everybody. Why in the United States are we still using these dump truck-looking buses? Why aren't they like the Muni buses, the low slung, a little sleeker in the first place? And then this kid's Kickstarter, or his Green Shields project wouldn't even be needed.
Actually, I think the best improvement of fuel efficiency is to not have school buses anymore and have your people, your children homeschooled.
Second.
Still going to school?
Me? Negative.
You know, this is, you know, my...
But I think that schools and jails are both examples of, you know, state control systems and indoctrination, and I fully support abolishing state.
Hey, this is the first thing that really I have just had my fourth grandchild a couple of weeks ago. My oldest is 3 years old. She just started going to a preschool at 3 years old. Last Tuesday was her first day. So she goes Tuesdays and Thursdays for just 4 hours a day. And I asked my son and daughter-in-law, and I go, oh, cool, you know, well, tell me about it, you know, and show me their curriculum and so on. Well, they had their schedule. Oh, 8 o'clock, you know, greet the kids, hey, what's up, and so on. And I looked at it, it's a private church preschool, and when the first thing they do during the day, Pledge of Allegiance, at 3 years old. And I go, okay, wait a minute. Time out. I mean, you know, can I have an opinion on this? You know, how much deprogramming do I got to do later, you know? So this is, you know, their mindset. You know, this is what they do. It's, you know, mandatory youth indoctrination camps, and they're not even in the public system. My children went 6 years from 7th to 12th grade to a Phoenix Christian Junior Senior High private school. It was a lot better than the public school. I got to know the parents. A lot of them were in line with me, but I saw enough W bumper stickers to last me a lifetime. But their whole thing was, oh, America. America, yeah, the recruiters, they bring all the army in, everybody take the tab, got America. And I'm going, wow. So this is, it's a culture thing. And I'm telling you, even the private schools, but it's changing. I've seen a lot of changes over the last decade, and I've been immersed in it with my kids and grandkids and all this stuff. Now, when the first child 3 years ago was born, it was like a big deal to not want them vaccinated. Now they, yeah, whatever, they got a pro, yeah, you know, it's not even a thing. Oh, you don't want to give them a social security number? Now, okay, fine. I mean, it's the culture is changing, and these kids are now becoming parents, and they have learned enough to not just go along with everything somebody in a uniform says.
You know, I throw something up with the Pledge of Allegiance thing. Try taking your family to go live in another country and send them to a school over there. And when you look at the agenda, and when you see the Pledge of Allegiance, you know what? When you're in that position, you actually see the statist, nationalistic insanity of even giving a Pledge of Allegiance. But it's like, you know, what are you supposed to tell? You know, you tell your kid, if you're in that type of situation, you know, you don't need to give a Pledge of Allegiance, or they're supposed to stand there and just go along with everyone, and they're pledging allegiance to a flag of a country that they're a foreign visitor to. It's that's crazy. I want to say something too, back with this kid, this guy that did these bus things. Your first question, Voodoo, was, is this something that he feels that's going to help his education? I think it is helping his education, but not in the way that he thinks. It's not going to be like, oh, better fuel efficiency. There's more money in the coffers to hire more expensive students and get fancier, more expensive textbooks and extracurricular, all that. No, he is getting a better education, but not because of the school. He's getting his education right now through planning this and working on it, all the science that he's learning, all the entrepreneurship, and hopefully by the time that this thing, which is kind of a fiasco for him right now, finally when it plays out, he's going to realize with science, screw going to the government and trying to get some type of grants and all this stuff. I'm going to make this a actual business. And then that's when he's going to graduate from his school.
Yep, could not agree more. Perfect. All right, before we move on to our last topic, let's make a few public service announcements. Smuggler would really, really like you to visit Anarplex.net. We keep saying that. What is Anarplex? Well, they specialize in operating darknets, private networks on the internet that are layered on top but hidden from the public. They specialize in consulting, development, deployment, and maintenance of darknets from IP space management, routing, gateways, covers, peers, and integrated infrastructure services. But he's also announced a new project at at shadowlife.cc, shadowlife.cc. He's being kind of cagey about it, so we don't know a lot about it, but knowing my friend Smuggler, it's going to be really cool. Go there, put in your email address, you'll get notified when shadowlife.cc is up. Harold White is the host of Cypherpunked and the Agora Social Club, and he co-hosts Coinbase with Plato. You can hear all those shows, they're great shows, awesome. It's like drinking from the fire hydrant, a lot of information. But you can hear them all on agorastradio.com. Of course, agorastradio.com is also the host of Reality Exploit Roundtable, so we thank Harold for that. Then we've got our special guest panelist, Mr. Ernest Hancock. Ernie uncovers the secrets and exposes the lies on his website, freedomsphoenix.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenix.com. You can listen to the dulcet tones of Ernest Hancock every weekday morning from 9 to noon Eastern on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM, on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. And if you're looking for agorist businesses, there's no better place to go than blackandyellowpages.com. All one word, blackandyellowpages.com. If you've got an agorist business and you would like to list it on Black and Yellow Pages, simple. Just send me an email at voodoo, V-O-O-D-O-O, at blackandyellowpages.com, and I'll give you an invite. You can set up your free listings. Okay, let's move on to our last topic. Germany says Facebook must delete facial recognition data or get users' permission to use it. Maybe the BND is just jealous.
The German Data Protection Authority has decided to reopen its inquiry into Facebook's facial recognition tech. The inquiry, set up by the Hamburg Data Protection Agency, centers on Facebook's Photo Tag Suggest feature, which analyzes photos uploaded to the social networking site and automatically matches faces to the site members using facial recognition software. The Hamburg Commissioner for Data Protection and Freedom of Information, Professor Dr. Johannes Kaspar, said, quote, Facebook seems to recognize that its current procedure to collect biometric data of its users conflicts with European and German data protection laws. This development is to be welcomed, yet Facebook is not entitled to stop their commitment halfway. It is regrettable that Facebook has not used the chance for a consensual solution, but is obviously playing for time. However, we will now resume administrative proceedings. Facebook has detailed knowledge of our legal opinion.
Our legal opinion. Smuggler, that's what I'm curious about. Here in the United States, all these agencies and administrations and departments, they all have, they arm the bureaucrats. So when they have an opinion, it comes out of the end of their shotgun. My legal opinion is you're going to do what I say or I'm going to shoot you in the face. What exactly is the threat to Facebook from the legal opinion of the German Data Authority?
Well, first of all, it's not the German Data Authority. It's just one of the data authorities here in Germany. It's just a state in Germany. It's a, you know, we are a federal union as the US is, more or less. So actually, it's just a guy in Hamburg saying something, and he gets media attention for it. The big threat, the biggest threat that there is for Facebook when it comes to the data protection authorities is a fine. And that fine is minimal, and it's really hard to get because Facebook doesn't have operations in Germany, but in Ireland. And Ireland said it's totally okay with what Facebook does. So really, the only thing that's going on here is two PR departments, that is the state versus Facebook. I don't like any of them, but they're just talking with themselves, and people think they're protected. Of course they're not.
Okay, Hero, we've talked on a previous episode about how friends and family can put photos on Facebook and give your name, and suddenly you're in their web of knowledge, and they can start making a network shadow profiles for you for non-Facebook users. In this case, and I apologize, yes, Hamburg Data Protection Agency is saying you either have to delete the data or get the user's permission. But what about those shadow users that don't even have profiles? How's Facebook supposed to get their permission?
I don't really have too much to add to that. I mean, you just said it. It's a whole hairball there with all the pictures on there. They would have to actually implement a thing that said that Facebook would be required to make a policy that you are only allowed to upload photos of yourself.
And I trust them. This is when my kids first started doing MySpace. I'll tell you how this went. I was in the studio one time, and the board op come, I go in during the break and we're yakking and so on. And he goes, oh, wow, man, your daughter's hot. I'm like, what? And he goes, yeah, here's her on the beach in Rocky Point in Mexico this last, I didn't even know she went. All of a sudden, he's looking at the MySpace page of her doing whatever and her friends and everything. He was just checking out my family. I'm going, hell, man, I'm going to have to get on MySpace so I can keep track of my kids. So I go on to Facebook, and we do it, you know, for some social networking with the site. But then you have, all of a sudden, it was like just a year or two ago, you load up pictures, and all of a sudden, it starts having names come underneath the pictures, and it facial recognized immediately who these people were. I'm going, holy crap. Well, you guys, you understand what's going on. So I'm looking for the alternative. I don't deal with Facebook. People communicate. Every now and then I go check it. 15 gazillion messages from people trying to communicate with me. They do events on Facebook. I don't even open them. I just don't deal with it because it's just more and more and more and more of this. I am certain that sooner or later, somebody's going to come up with an alternative that has value, and then you're going to see a change.
It's called Diaspora.
Well, send it to me. I'll put it up on Freedom's Phoenix, yeah. Man. Brock will. Let's do it.
late breaking entry here. Yesterday in Slate magazine, Philip N. Howard writes this editorial, and it's absolutely freaking hilarious. It's how we should nationalize Facebook. And he's got all these, Facebook is a public good, and this is, they've got data protection problems and privacy but we could force them to fix their privacy problems if we just nationalized them. And we can stop them from, this was the money quote, we can stop them from being a tool of authoritative dictatorships by forcing them to allow the use of pseudonyms. Anyway, but if you look through the bottom line of the guy's argument was the United States doesn't have somebody like Johannes Kaspar, the Dr. Johannes Kaspar in Hamburg, and so therefore there's no protection against private companies collecting data and not respecting your privacy in the United States.
Well, there isn't, and it's not. Just having an officer that claims to do data protection doesn't mean you get it. So there's not a big chance.
Yeah, and I would like to see how many of these data protection laws apply to the same people who are supposed to be protecting them of some government status, and that's usually not the case. Something just hits me. It resonates with me so wrong that when I hear the government cracking down on particular like privacy issues between companies and the way that they share their data back and forth with everything that they're involved with. So a lot of like the smuggler was saying with the people over there doing political moves for their own departments and the like while everything continues to go on as it is. Also back with this thing about nationalizing Facebook and Ernest, you talked about an alternative solution. Is that the alternate solution is not going to be Facebook 2, which is this centralized, massive, massive company handling everyone's data, which tells you that they support it. That's not going to be the solution. The solution is, and just like and the solution in the United States is not, you know, the problem with this, what we need is we need a new Federal Reserve that has a better thing. No, we don't. The problem in the first place of all these systems is centralization is the first problem. Because once you're centralized, well, there's a lot of...
I have complete understanding with that. This is the point. Okay. From the beginning, there was a decision that, you know, all the geeky guys made. It was like, are we going to have on-ramps? Are we going to have internet service providers? Are we going to, you know, have you go through this guy to do it, and then you create an address that goes to whatever, and it goes through that funnel? Or are you just going to have, you know, the free use of, like, radio waves? You know, it's just like you have bandwidth out there, and you make your computer the node. I mean, and they made the decision to go the other way. Sooner or later, somebody is going to offer just the ability to transmit ones and zeros to my receiver, my router, to a satellite, to my computer, to go to other people. It's going to be like a bulletin board. I mean, that's how we used to communicate. It's called Paul Revere net back in 93, 94. I know how that worked. That's, you know what, we can't do that? Heck, we're going to be doing ham radios with it. So it's coming. I'm waiting on you now.
Ernie, it's going to be here sooner rather than later. There's a lot of people aiming towards that. The one that's furthest along is Reddit's MeshNet effort. Check out /r/darknetplan and /r/MeshNet.
Send me an email. Put it up on the site.
A big project on this for an absolutely fully decentralized internet communication system, which is actually meant to, this system is meant so that as the internet, as this system grows, it actually supersedes the internet infrastructure. It can replace the current internet infrastructure. And that doesn't mean that it replaces it for everybody in the world. What it does is it can replace it for everybody who uses it, and that system is CJDNS. So what you're talking about, and you know, Smuggler mentioned the Diaspora, also a fully decentralized system. All of these things are being worked on, and there's probably about a dozen other projects that are related to this. So at the same time that the state right now is creating an apparatus of absolute totalitarianism, at the same time, there is another completely decentralized system of anti-police state apparatus that's being developed, and it's not all here, and the people that are using it now, because a lot of this you can use, but it's not necessarily like that user friendly and ready for prime time, but the people that are using it now, as that grows, you will be able to choose these places that you go on. So you may people, some of these kids, they say, well, I don't care about Facebook, but there's millions of people on Facebook that do not transact their marijuana purchases on Facebook. Okay. There's things that there's the black market in the United States of billions of dollars that's not transacting on Facebook. And now these people may not be interested in it, and they may be not using Bitcoin right now. They're using dollars, and they may be not using some of the, like I said, some of these new technologies, but they are starting to. So just because they may not use them, they may say, oh, I find the benefits of Facebook great. They're going to be able to use Facebook. And they'll use Facebook for showing, oh, I went to this party and went to this, and I like all this stuff. But then they're still going to have these other alternative things to do the things that they want and maintain privacy that they want. So I think that the future is growing, and it's going to be up to individuals, decentralized communities, decentralized networks, and then from there it will grow. I don't see
it. I'm doing my best to help, and I tell you what's happened. If you go to the FreedomsPhoenix.com, Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. You go there, and the top right, you'll see a banner ad for the Freedoms Phoenix e-zine, our digital magazine. March edition 2012 is all about this. In fact, this Monday, I have on my show Nick Barnett, a good friend of mine that, you know, kind of does a lot of my geeky stuff. We're going to be talking all about Silk Road. So BitTorrent, Silk Road, Coin, all, I get it. I'm telling you. It's not for lack of anything other than just making it convenient for individuals to use it. See, the thing is that it's always the just button. Oh, you just this. You just, like today when we were doing the mumble thing, you know, Brock sends all the stuff. We go through. We're a half hour, 40 minutes to get this thing set up. I guarantee people don't go through that. If it's not as simple as something like Facebook, they don't do it. It is simplicity. If you don't have that, it's not going to work. And I understand all these guys I talk to, all they go, yeah, we're Ernie, you just. I'm looking on my keyboard. I don't see a just button. Show me the just button. And if you don't show me this button, because I went through this in the early 90s, it was DOS. Oh, you just command stroke, kind of you whatever. I'm going, next. Then here came Windows. When they do this, and it gets to Linux, and it gets into nodes, and it gets on satellite communication, you do UHF channels, TV channels that you're using, and you get an entire 60-mile radius in the Valley of the Sun here that then links up fiber optic satellite, De La, whatever the heck, with Albuquerque, and find you all of a sudden got an internet that slowly bypassed a DOD's internet. You know, it will happen, but it will happen because it's made simple and easy. What's easy for you is not easy for people that have just 5% less of an IQ than you. They just can't. The masses are not there. So as it gets easier, you'll see this explode. I'm preparing for it.
Agreed. I have a question for you, Ernest. Have you tried Bitcoin yet?
I have an account. I have probably the original Bitcoin that one of you guys used at Libertos. Somebody got from somewhere. I had it, and I hold it up to the camera all the time and look at this and went and add and people give to. In fact, when we went to Pork Fest, We have dime cards that we made that gave us our own Bitcoin QR code. So anytime we just pull it out and blip, and people gave us Bitcoins for whatever stuff we were selling. That's how we did transactions.
Okay, I'm just curious because you're talking about usability. You've used it to send and receive. What are your feelings on it? From your perspective,
I'm not going to put my life savings in it yet. You know, the thing is, I think it.
No. I'm talking about usability, not.
Oh, no. It's cool. I'm big two thumbs up, family, good fun. We're going to be talking about it, a lot on Monday. But, and I understand the concept behind it. I understand, the whole aspects. I say, when you got Schumer up there bitching about it, you're onto a good thing. So I'm like, okay. So let's see how it goes and see, there's been some bad press on it and so on. But people that do understand it, understand that that was not really a fault with the Bitcoin and the concept as much as it was application of it. But the thing is, I'm going, okay, I see it's things like this that's coming, but I still like that, have it in my hand, kind of, give me some silver and gold. But, it makes a good money, a good storage of wealth, but it doesn't really necessarily make a good currency. That's where Bitcoin comes in. So I'm going, okay, you want to have trade and transactions and so on and be encrypted and it not be out, somebody can take, I get it. I'm with you. Even though I don't understand the technical aspects of it, I understand the philosophical aspects of it and the threat that it poses to the state, and I'm all about that.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a little preview, too, is that Bitcoin has another system called Namecoin, which is basically what Bitcoin does to in terms of competing with or replacing a centralized money issuing system. The Namecoin system can completely smash the entire domain name system from its monopoly. And there are several other technologies out there, like with the SSL certificate authorities. All of these things we are right on the edge of just smashing their, not destroying those systems, but actually smashing their monopoly on the entire infrastructure. And their monopoly, their centralized monopoly, is where the government has been able to get in and take a chokehold for, issues of freedom of speech and money transfer and all
these
other things.
Has been my experience in how this works. When Wired Magazine first started making a big deal out of, online gold, is e-gold. When e-gold went from like London to Dubai and all that, we were big on this. Oh, it was all about libertarians, we're going alternative, and here we go. Oh, then what happened? Well, here comes the man, and they're like, and we sue you, we seize you, we get because we can. So I'm going, okay, I see where this is going. Well, the thing is that's why libertarians always have the philosophy of possession of anything is not a crime. I don't care what it is. Kitty porn, this, that, may be evidence of a crime, but it's not the crime itself. Is anyone aggressing against an individual by having possession of whatever, good, bad, and that's not the point. Maybe evidence of a crime, but it's not the crime. And the reason is because when they can't get at you for doing something they deem illegal, trading something, using Bitcoin exchange, they'll call you counterfeiters or your enemy of the state, the national security, whatever the heck they come up with. Sooner or later, they come up with some law that's going to be possession of a Bitcoin, possession of an account number, possession of a website, possession. It's always about possession. That's when you know that they're going, it's like in the rappers, they do, yeah, well, this and you're that, and all of a sudden they give up and they say, your mama. Yeah, well, your mama. Well, that's what the government's doing. They're going, your mama, because they always are coming back to possession, and they always will. They'll go in. It was the reason I ran for Congress in 96 against John Shadegg was once he got in there, he advocated for a bill called H.R. 666, aptly numbered, and it was all about making it legal to go in without a warrant, for anything specific, take your hard drive, look for criminal activity on the hard drive, and then charge you with it. And I'm going, oh, I see where this is going. Possession of ones and zeros, they must make a crime. And they've been planning this for over 15 years. What do you do with that?
Brain wallet.
There you fail. Brain wallet, encryption, etc.
Well, you got a brain wallet guilty.
Wait a second, Ernie. You've got to
hear about
this
brain wallet. Yeah, but you got a brain wallet guilty. Guilty, you got a brain wallet guilty.
No. Listen, brain wallet is an algorithm, okay? Where it's like possession. It's like you know you know PGP, right? This is like being able to use PGP without having to have keys, okay? A brain wallet, you actually memorize 10 words. As an example, you memorize just these 10 words, okay? And you can, once you have those 10 words, you can receive Bitcoins and you can send Bitcoins, and you don't need to have a Bitcoin client. Okay, so you can cross borders with no computer, go to an internet cafe and type in a couple of words and transfer every Bitcoins to other people. Okay, so there is no possession because you don't have to have any keys at all. So there are some weird technologies like this that are really crazy when you start to understand the implications of being able to do a money transfer. Like I can say to you right now, I could create a brain wallet right now called Ernest Plato Smuggler Voodoo, right? I could put money in it and I could say that to you on the show. And I'm sure there's people that are listening to this show right now that are typing in those words to see if there's any balance in there. So it's too much to get into right now.
No, I understand, but what would be the law? You know, the use of.
It wouldn't be related to a possession.
Yeah, because there's nothing to possess. The only thing you possess is that key phrase. So whatever it is, pizza, 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 that's all you possess. Well, okay, so I knew the word pizza long before it became my key phrase. All right, guys. Hey, you know what? This is awesome. Awesome. I told y'all this was going to be a very special episode of Reality Exploit Roundtable. This was episode 5, thanks to Plato, Smuggler, Hero, and of course our special guest panelist, Ernest Hancock, for their thoughts on everything we talked about. We can continue this conversation, actually, on the Pound Agora IRC channel. Just go to anterplex.net, and under the Files and Projects link, you'll find an invitation, a link called An Invitation, and that'll give you all your connection information that you need. Links to the topics we discussed are going to be available in the show notes at agorastradio.com. And, of course, you can find our past episodes on agorastradio.com also. And last but not least, a big thank you goes to you for listening to Reality Exploit Roundtable. Talk to you next episode.